New Year, Misfits. And boy, are we ready to get 2018 started off with a bang. Or is it a poisoning? That's right. We're reading a real whodunit this month by the Queen of Mystery herself, Agatha Christie. We open things up with some bookish resolutions and news before giving you the skinny on Agatha and Crooked House, this month's pick. Oh, and we've got yet another giveaway planned for you, dear listeners. So, let's get this party started. Hi, this is Maria Blackheart, and welcome to the Misfit Book Club, a podcast for readers, weirdos, blue stockings, normals, scribbling women, madmen, loons, screwballs, and every type of bookish person in between. This is episode 11, and I'm joined by my co-host, Pixie Berger.
Happy New Year, Maria.
Aw, Happy New Year to you.
I could not have said goodbye to 2017 with any more enthusiasm than I did. I was so freaking excited to move out of that year.
It was just the worst.
I can, you can always look back and say, hey, there were some really good things that happened. Sure, there's always that. But overall, I think 2017 tried really hard to kill me. So I'm grateful that it's over and that we can move on.
2018's on notice, though. I'm keeping my eye on it. Mm-hmm. Like, I have high expectations for it. And by high expectations, I mean just expectations.
I don't generally call myself like either an optimist or a pessimist, but I do mm-hmm. think it matters like how you approach the new year. If you're like, oh, it's going to be horrible, then it might start out horrible. So I think I'm going to try hard this year to actually be an optimist and hope for the best and look for the best and see if that mindset changes things that happen to me.
That is so funny because I don't do resolutions, New Year's resolutions. I mean, I do resolutions, but they're all practical. It's like, write more thank you notes.
Mm-hmm.
I do more like intentions, right? But this year I was like, I'm going to try and keep a gratitude journal because I read some article online that said if you keep a gratitude journal, it literally kind of rewires the way your brain works. So if you have to sit down and like write some good stuff that happens to you on a daily, weekly basis, it helps rewire your brain to recognize when good stuff happens to you too. So I'm going to try that and see how it works.
That sounds like an excellent experiment.
So how were your holidays?
My holidays were crazy. I don't want to go into too many details for our dear listeners, but as I said, 2017 tried to kill me. I had a medical emergency toward the end of the month, and mm-hmm. I'm okay. I'm doing well. I'm grateful for good friends like Maria who have taken care of me. And I guess if I have a resolution, which I don't have a formal one for the year, it's just to like try to be healthier so that I don't have any more instances like this, because that was pretty scary.
Well, while we were at your place, we watched a lot of good TV. We had some sushi that I still think about.
Mm.
And you introduced me to fruit tea.
Yes, it's delicious. Well, next time you come back, we'll get some more fruit tea and I'll actually try to entertain you and do some fun things here instead of making you sit and watch all of the Real Housewives franchises with me.
Girl, that was entertaining. I loved it.
How was your holiday, Maria?
I mean, we covered this. I don't like the holidays. Mm-hmm. So I survived. And that is pretty much my goal every year. I almost shared the story on Twitter, but I decided to save it for the podcast. So my dog is really smart and incredibly judgy, and I rarely live up to her expectations for me. So a few nights ago, we were asleep and our dog came into the bedroom and just started like pawing my husband in the face to wake him up. And we woke up and she started kind of walking around and whining, which she never does. And we're like, what is going on? And then we heard it. There's a low battery in the smoke detector in the room where her bed is. And she was just like, this isn't okay. We've got to do something. And so we have to like go to the garage, get the ladder, come back out. Well, in the meantime, our dog is like moving out. She's carrying her like stuffed animals out one at a time to our bedroom. She's like, I don't know what the hell you guys are doing, but I'm not living in this death trap anymore. It's 3 a.m, by the way. I go to lay down and she's laid her toys on my side of the bed, like evicted me. So anyway, that pretty much sums up how our holiday went.
Dogs, they do what they want. That's why we love them.
But, you know, now that it's the new year, I know we both kind of mentioned our normal resolutions or lack thereof, but do you make any book resolutions?
So normally I do. I used to make them. I used to publicly announce my resolutions on Instagram. It was a whole thing for me, but this year I completely forgot about my book resolutions. And I'm not kidding when I say that I made 5 and I did not meet a single one of them. So I just thought maybe this year, since I'm clearly incapable of following through with anything, I just thought maybe I should take a year off and just read what I want and see how it goes.
That actually sounds kind of nice, though.
No one really cares about my resolutions if I can't keep them. My Goodreads challenge was even a disaster. They give you like an option of how many books you want to read. And to be fair to myself, I read a ton for work and I don't count any of those things toward my Goodreads challenge. Right. But all that is to say, no, I did not make any resolutions for books this year. But did you?
Nothing formal. So sometimes I pick like a reading challenge, but that all felt too much for me this year. So I just kind of set a total on Goodreads. I'm aiming for 50 books, which I think is ambitious, and I'll see if I hit it. And if I do, that'll be great. And if I don't, I'm not going to be mad at myself about it.
I bet you
maybe that's my
it.
Resolution.
Yeah. Let's be gentle with ourselves.
And I read for fun.
Yep.
Like, it's something I really enjoy. That's why we're doing this podcast, is because we love it and we want to share it with other people. And sometimes I feel like those lists take the fun out of it.
They can. If it turns into like a numbers game and you feel inadequate at the end of it, that's not fun.
And then other people are like, I read 150 books this year. And I'm like, how? Do you work for a living? How do you feed yourself?
Do you remember anything that you read? I mean, that's a question I have too.
Are you reading Cliff Notes? Those aren't books. No, just kidding.
They are not. That's true. They don't count. But yeah, if you are doing something because it's fun for you, if you like setting goals for yourself and you meet them and you get satisfaction from that, then great. If it makes you feel like a failure, just don't do it. You did tell me about some pretty interesting kind of bookish challenges that you've seen. Do you want to talk about those?
There's one I want to mention. Our friend on Bookstagram, her name is Whitney at the Unread Shelf. We've given her a couple shout outs in our episodes. She actually has the Unread Shelf Project 2018. So it's hashtag Unread Shelf Project 2018. And she's joined with two other Bookstagrammers, Kate at Kate Reads Books and Christina at Cal's Books. And her goal is to get people to read the books that they have on their shelves that they haven't read yet. So one of the things that Bookstagram does really well is it makes me want to buy a ton of books. And so I do, and then they end up on my shelf, and then 3 years, 4 years goes by, and I have these beautiful books that I've never read. And so she wants to encourage people to read what they've got. And so she said that this is an exercise in contentment, self-discipline, and enjoying what she has instead of accumulating more. And so I think that's really great. Because Lord knows I have so many books I haven't read. I'm almost ashamed.
Me too. I have way more books than I probably will ever read in my whole life.
I read an article once that said, like, even avid readers will probably only read 3,000 books in their lifetime. And I was like, what? No.
That doesn't seem like enough.
Cue panic.
Yeah, for real.
I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but I'll tell it again. So when I was little, there were a handful of times that I cried myself to sleep at night because I was convinced I would read every single book in the world and then there would be no more books to read.
Oh, my word.
I was a bit of a high-strung kid.
What a thing to panic over.
I know.
I love it.
I know.
Yeah, good thing there are like 10 books born every minute or something like that. You're good.
So anyway, that's the one challenge that I really wanted to call out. If you guys are participating in a challenge or you have a special book resolution, make sure to tell us and we'll share those on our next episode.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea. I'd love to hear what you guys wanted to challenge yourselves to do this year. That's fun.
So why don't we talk about some book news? We didn't have that last month.
Oh, we didn't? We forgot book news?
Well, we did gift guides instead.
Okay, that's true. Well, there's some book news. Holidays are kind of slow for books, but January, it really picks back up again. So there was some really sad news that came out this past week about Sue Grafton passing away. That was really a sad one for me.
Yeah, Sue Grafton wrote the Alphabet Mysteries. It starts with A is for Alibi, and she wrote was writing a mystery for every letter of the alphabet. And Y for Yesterday came out in the summer. So her daughter said that Sue was adamant that her books would never be like turned into movies or TV shows, and she never wanted to have them ghostwritten. So she released a statement that said that as far as the family is concerned, the alphabet now ends in Y.
Oh, that's right. So sweet.
It is.
It's hard to lose people like that. You know, a lot of the people that we read, they're like not with us, but the ones that are still with us, it's just hard. It's sad because they're heroes. They're modern day heroes for me, at least.
Oh, man, the day Neil Gaiman dies, somebody's going to have to come rescue me because I'm just going to be no good for anything.
I'm going to die first. Don't worry.
Well, I sure hope not.
I'm kidding. Anyway, that was a morbid thought. Apologies. Another thing that made me really sad was reading President Obama's best of reading list this year. And I know that was not the point. He didn't publish it to make us sad, but I'm pretty sure bookworms all over the United States cried when they read this list because it was like, ugh, what it was like to have a president who actually read books. So if you haven't looked it up yet, you should go check it out. He just kind of posted on his Facebook and I guess linked it on Twitter or whatever to like his favorite books of the year and also some of his favorite songs. And he has good taste. So
to be fair, I'm sure Trump is going to release his list. It's going to be the best list ever. It's going to be huge.
Bigger.
Bigger, better, and it's going to be like Hop on Pop and the nutrition information on a KFC bucket of chicken.
I did read today that he likes to eat at McDonald's because he's concerned about being poisoned. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Why could you not be poisoned at McDonald's? I don't understand. But obviously, I didn't read the whole article. It was just a headline.
McDonald's is poison. What is he talking about?
So yeah,
and I love McDonald's, so yeah, you know, pot calling
I mean kettle. I do too. It's, you know, I go there all the time. But yeah, Obama's reading list included a book that I love called Evicted by Matthew Desmond. Fantastic book. And then Sing Unburied Sing by Jesmyn Ward, I believe she's a new MacArthur genius, among other things. Jesmyn Ward is kind of an it girl right now,
man. 3 more years. We got this.
I hope so. Live for the moment. Live for today. We might not have it tomorrow.
But hopefully we have it tomorrow because we have some really great book to movie adaptations coming out this year. Mm-hmm. So Book Riot published a list of 13 book to movie adaptations that are coming out in 2018. And there are some great ones like right on the horizon. Mm-hmm. So A Wrinkle in Time comes out in March, and then Ready Player One in March. That one is directed by Steven Spielberg, I think.
It is, yeah.
And then Where'd You Go, Bernadette comes out in May. And I love that book. It is so great. I cannot wait to see it on the big screen. Oh, and then, of course, The Hate U Give is coming out later this year. They don't have a release date for it. And I included this one for our friend at 799 Books. They are making an adaptation of We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
Wow.
Which I had no idea about that, but yeah, that is exciting.
That does. Oh, man, that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to adapt that, but hey, I'm all for it.
Me too.
So
love it.
All right. So that's the book news for this week. There's actually quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
And now we get to talk about our January pick and introduce it. And we are reading Crooked House by Agatha Christie.
The Queen of Mystery.
Mm-hmm. She is the best-sellingest novelist of all time. That's not right.
I think the best-selling novelist of all time, right?
Oh, Lord.
The bestingest-sellingest.
I words for work. It's... It's goodest. It's fine.
Agatha Christie, I think, is having a real moment right now. She, all these movie adaptations are coming out. People just seem to be rediscovering mystery and enjoying it. I think that genre is really resurging. And she's, like we said, the queen of it. And so it's just natural that all of her stories are going to get a little bit more play. So I'm really excited about that because I personally love a good mystery, especially a clever one that surprises me. That mm-hmm. is very impressive. And that's what Agatha Christie is so good at, right? She's the best at mm-hmm. it.
See, and that's so fun because I don't read a lot of mystery, which is hysterical because Sherlock Holmes is sort of my jam. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I don't really dive into the genre. So a lot of the conventions and things like that aren't really going to be obvious to me. So I'm excited to come into this as a fresh reader. Mm-hmm. So have you read much Agatha?
I would not say much. I mean, especially mm-hmm. considering how much she's published, no. But I've read a handful of her novels. And this one I'm really excited about because I'm mostly familiar with Miss Marple and the Poirot novels. And this one is not either of those. She's, you know, got these famous detectives in her novels. And this one is just kind of a standalone book. I think that this is the first of that type that I've read of hers. And I'm looking forward to that.
And that's really great, too, because if our listeners are intimidated by the fact that some of these books are in, you know, 10, 11, 12 book series, they don't have to worry about that with Crooked House. Crooked House is an entity unto itself.
That's right.
So you can just pick it up, read it, and you don't have to know anything about anything.
And really, you don't have to know, like, you don't have to read the first 10 Miss Marple books to read the 11th one. They all mm-hmm. are standalones. It's just you get to know a character and their style and they kind of build on each other, but it's not necessary. So anyone can jump in on this challenge. And it's not a very long book. I think it's a good read for us in January as we're kind of getting back into the groove of things.
Yeah, I think it really is good. The only other Agatha Christie book I've ever read is Elephants Never Forget, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's the only one I've read. I did somehow stumble upon and read a book called Three Bags Full by an author named Leonie Swan. Mm-hmm. And it is a parody of the Miss Marple mysteries where all of the characters are sheep.
What?
Yes. Like, I didn't realize that it was based on the Agatha Christie books. I was just very confused as to why I was reading a mystery featuring sheep.
You're like, what?
And also, that's just weird.
It's weird, I gotta say. I did not grow up reading Agatha Christie. I kind of discovered her later in life, and I mm-hmm. didn't really know that she was as prolific as she is, or was. I was kind of raised up on Nancy Drew books. There were Nancy Drew books in the library that spanned an entire shelf. And so I kind of discovered Nancy Drew. And then when I was a little bit older, I found Mary Higgins Clark. And
who? Oh, God, I have so many thoughts. I'm sorry. Finish and then.
Yeah. So I would walk down to the library in my neighborhood and, you know, pull a yellow spined Nancy Drew book off of the shelf and read it. So that was kind of how I cut my teeth on mystery.
Nancy Drew holds such a special place in my heart because my mom would buy those yellow-spined Nancy Drew books at Sam's Club. They sold them packaged in packages of four, mm-hmm. and she would bring them home. And at night, before I went to bed, we would read like two or three chapters together. And those were the only books where I wasn't allowed to read ahead because we were just reading them together. And so I have these wonderful memories of my mom and I in bed together reading these Nancy Drew books. And aww. My mom still has them.
I love it.
Yeah, I know. I love it too. And so anyway, I really love Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Mary Higgins Clark. Did you know that she didn't start writing mysteries until her 40s?
No, but that's amazing. I was looking her up the other day and she's like 90 years old. Mm-hmm. She's still going strong.
Mm-hmm. Don't let your dreams be dreams.
That's right, everybody. There's still time.
So back to Miss Agatha. Agatha was born in England in 1890, and she became and remains the best-selling novelist of all time. And she's only been outsold by the Bible and Shakespeare.
That's nuts. That is nuts.
Like, girls run this world. Sorry.
Girls make money. They make yes. money with their books, guys.
And she made money.
Yeah.
At some point, she had to slow down how many books she was churning out every year because of the tax implications.
Wow.
She like didn't want to get taxed at some incredibly high rate after World War II. So she slowed her production. Let that sink in for a second.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So Agatha Christie's books have sold over 1 billion copies in the English language alone and over 1 billion in translation.
Those numbers are staggering.
Because she was prolific, but it's not like she was like James Patterson prolific. No shade to James. A little shade to James Patterson.
We know for sure that she was writing her books.
Yeah, no ghostwriting.
No. It's amazing that someone can write 2 or 3 books in a year. Let's just say that. It's even more amazing that someone could write as books as good as hers that quickly.
And so she started writing at 18, and she started with short stories. So she got an early start, but she didn't publish her first novel until 1919. And it was
Poirot? Hercule Poirot?
Thank you. I should just be like, say it again, Pixie. A Poirot novel, The Mysterious Affair at Stiles. So that came out in 1919, and it was an immediate hit. Like, she sold it, they requested 4 more novels from her, and her writing career basically took off.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, she had gotten married. She was married to Archie Christie, who she met in 1912, and they got married in 1914, but they didn't live together until 1918 because of World War I. I say that because this is going to be important later.
Uh-huh.
So just put a pin in that. Don't forget.
Yes. Implications for this book is what we need. Yeah. Gotcha. All right.
So back to her novels. Most of her books were published by William Collins and Sons, which is now HarperCollins Publishers. So HarperCollins still publishes all the Agatha Christie books when they go back into reprints. Isn't that cool?
It is cool. And I think they have, it's under its own imprint, or they are in the William and Morrow imprint. It's really cool. If you want to like know tons more about Agatha Christie, there is a great website for her.
Oh.
I think it's agathachristie.com or something like that. Very easy. But they have all these really fun facts and just like deep dives that you can take into her biography. And one of the things that I ran across was that, when Poirot died in the books, he got his own obituary in the New York Times.
That's awesome.
I know. I can't think of any other literary figures who got their own obituaries in the Times. So I just pulled this little piece from it. And it said, at the end of his life, he was arthritic and had a bad heart. He was in a wheelchair often and was carried from his bedroom to the public lounge at Stiles Court, a nursing home in Essex, wearing a wig and false mustaches to mask the signs of age that offended his vanity. In his active days, he was always impeccably dressed. Mr. Poirot, who was just 5 feet, 4 inches tall, went to England from Belgium during World War I as a refugee. He settled in a little town not far from Stiles, then an elaborate country estate, where he took on his first private case. The news of his death, given by Dame Agatha, was not unexpected. Word that he was near death reached here last May. So it was like they got wind of the fact that Poirot was going to die in one of the books, and they prepared an obituary and printed it for him in the paper.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing how people fall in love with characters like that.
Yeah.
Because Sherlock Holmes was the same. Mm-hmm. So Arthur Conan Doyle killed Sherlock Holmes off in The Final Problem because he got sick of writing Sherlock Holmes and he didn't like that Holmes was more famous than he was. And I know, what are you going to do? Authors, right? Anyway, I think The Strand was still publishing the Sherlock Holmes stories at this point. And like Arthur Conan Doyle got death threats. Somebody mailed a pipe bomb to his house.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. People wore black armbands and went into mourning. And there's a story that he was walking down the street and this little old lady stopped him and was like, are you Arthur Doyle? And he was like, yes, ma'am, I am. Thinking that she was going to be like, I just love your writing. And she started beating him with her handbag. And she's like, you bring him back.
How dare you, man?
Mystery lovers love their detectives. Mm-hmm. Do not get between a mystery reader and her detective.
That's
or
right.
She will beat you with her handbag.
Take note.
I get it, though. What a wonderful thing for the New York Times to do.
Yeah.
And that would have happened pretty recently, like in the 70s, right?
It did. Yeah, it happened not too long before Agatha Christie herself passed away.
And so Poirot is not Christie's only detective. She also wrote the Miss Marple mysteries, which you pointed out, and the Tommy and Tuppence novels, and a whole bunch of standalones. So she was incredibly prolific and had lots of different characters that you could fall in love with. And so Christie would go on to write 66 detective novels, 6 romances under the name Mary Westmacott. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. 14 short story collections, as well as the world's longest running play, The Mousetrap. And The Mousetrap is really interesting because it's still playing in West End. You can go see it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Our friend was teaching a study abroad trip and she took all of her students to see it and they loved it.
Amazing.
That's really cool. And now I'm bummed I didn't go see it with them. I think I went and saw The Lion King instead. I'm not mad about it.
That's pretty good.
So anyway, back on topic, Agatha Christie died in 1976 at the age of 85. And that was right after the first Murder on the Orient Express movie came out that had Albert Finney as Poirot. And her verdict was that the movie was good, but Poirot's mustache was not nearly luxurious enough.
Ooh. Hmm.
Mustache shade.
Pretty sure it was a fake mustache. They probably could have done better.
Right.
For the sake of Dame Agatha A. Poirot.
I feel like there are like 30 dirty jokes there, but I'm just going to leave them all.
Let's just leave them. Let's just let our listeners' imaginations run wild.
I love it. This brings me to my absolute favorite Agatha Christie story.
Mm-hmm.
Agatha Christie's first husband, Archie, had fallen in love with another woman named Nancy Neal. They were like golf buddies or something. Isn't that how it always goes?
Lame.
So dumb. Anyway, so he told her, Archie told Agatha, like, I want a divorce. And Agatha Christie straight up lost it. Like, she left her daughter with the maids and she walked out of the house and she disappeared. And once people figured out she was gone, they called the authorities and over 1,000 police officers, 15,000 volunteers, and several airplanes looked for her for 10 days. 10 days! Even Sir Arthur Conan Doyle consulted on the case. And eventually they found her at a hotel in Yorkshire registered as a Mrs. Teresa Neal. And Neal was the last name of the woman that Archie was leaving her for.
Right.
And so she was found and basically like that was it. Doctors said she had amnesia, but, you know, it was all sort of suspect. Other people thought she was doing it as a like publicity stunt. And Agatha herself didn't comment on it ever. So we have no idea why she did what she did, what she hoped to accomplish, like. It remains a really interesting literary mystery.
See, I've always heard it kind of talked about as this thing that she did on purpose.
Really?
Yes. I mean, no one knows for sure, obviously.
Right.
But the way that she disappeared, it was almost as though she planned it to look like she was maybe faking her own death. Or she was pretending to be kidnapped or something like that. Because when they started the search for her, it was because they had found her getaway car and it was left with like the lights on and most of her belongings were still in the car. So it looked very sketchy, like someone had, you know, abruptly taken her from the scene. And so it wasn't like she was just quietly slipping away. There were all these weird things that happened that made it look like she possibly could have just been trying to immerse herself in some sort of mystery novel of her own invention. I mean, and if anyone could fake their own death or leave a trail of clues, or I guess not worthwhile clues, if that makes any sense, like throw you off the scent, it would be Agatha Christie.
Do you think she was trying to set up her husband?
That is a theory.
Ooh, I like it.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I've heard as well that Gone Girl, the novel by Gillian Flynn, was slightly inspired by that story.
Oh, well, that makes sense. I think that story also inspired a Dorothy Sayers novel.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Agatha causing quite the stir. I love that. like a mystery author then being part of her own mystery. And that's one of those kind of constructs of mystery novels that happens occasionally. So I'm specifically thinking of The Sherlockian, which is about basically people who are obsessed with Sherlock who find themselves in an actual mystery.
Yeah.
I can see, like, if you love the genre, I can see, like, wanting to be a part of that. And isn't that really kind of what escape rooms are, if you really think about it?
Yes, I think so. Trying to solve your way out.
Have you ever done one?
I haven't. No, I've never done one.
Girl, I did one. It was Sherlock Holmes themed, which is why I did it. And I was like, I'm an expert. I'm going to come in and solve all this stuff. And like none of the actual missed like things you had to solve had anything to do with Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. Then I was pissed. I was like, I came here to be the expert.
Well, and another thing about that story that is fascinating to me is that, you know, this is in what year? When did this happen? 1926?
Yes.
Something like 26. That. Yeah. And so the reason she was discovered is that people knew who she was. Fans recognized her at this hotel and were like, this is like Agatha Christie, we think. And they called the police. Basically, she was trying, if she was hiding out or if she had amnesia or whatever, people knew who she was. This is like pre-celebrity age, right? She was that famous of a writer that she was widely recognizable and couldn't be hidden.
Well, or she just didn't disguise herself very well.
Mm-hmm.
That is a really fun story, and I really like it. And actually, there's a lot of Agatha Christie's biography that inspires Crooked House, or at least is in Crooked House. So the two main characters, Charles and Sophia, are separated by war, and they come back together, right? There's a lot of kind of family intrigue in Crooked House, and you can definitely see how some aspects of Agatha Christie's life bleed over into this novel.
Yeah. One of the things that excited me about this book is when you read the foreword, there's a little author's note from Agatha Christie that, of course, from Agatha Christie, author's note. but she writes about how it's one of her favorite books. It's a special favorite of hers because it was one that she had thought about for many years, but just never made time to write. And she said that for 5 books that she struggled and struggled and struggled to write, there was one that was a joy and a pleasure. And Crooked House was one of those books. And people seem to agree with her because she got really, really good reviews on it. And basically, it was a pleasure project for her. That says a lot, I think, for someone who wrote 70-something books.
Absolutely. You know, Crooked House came out kind of in the, I would say, kind of middle to late middle of her writing career. So it published in 1949, and the title is inspired by a nursery rhyme, which is also quoted in the book. And the nursery rhyme is, there was a crooked man, and he walked a crooked mile. He found a crooked sixpence upon a crooked stile. He bought a crooked cat, which caught a crooked mouse, and they all lived together in a little crooked house.
Spooky.
Right?
Yeah.
So I've got to admit, have you read any of it yet?
I've started it, yes.
Yeah. So I've read the first, I mean, just a little bit. And all I can think of is Clue. I'm just like, this is a weirdo house full of weirdo people, just like Clue.
It probably is.
Clue's the best movie. I'm sorry, I don't want to hear anything about it.
So do you want to give us a summary of the story before we get started?
Yes. All right, here we go. In the sprawling, half-timbered mansion in the affluent suburb of Swinley Dean, Aristide Leonides lies dead from barbiturate poisoning. An accident? Not likely. In fact, suspicion has already fallen on his luscious widow, a cunning beauty 50 years his junior, set to inherit a sizable fortune and rumored to be carrying on with a strapping young tutor comfortably ensconced in the family estate. But criminologist Charles Hayward is casting his own doubts on the innocence of the entire Leonides brood. He knows them intimately, and he's certain that in a crooked house such as Three Gables, no one's on the level.
That's a great copy. That's good.
Luscious widow. I don't want to be a widow, but I wouldn't mind being called luscious.
Luscious widow. Yeah.
I need, like, some of those pants from the early aughts that has, like, luscious across the butt. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, or juicy.
Making it classy. Mm-hmm.
So there's a new movie adaptation of Crooked House. And that's part of the reason that we chose this book. It's starring Glenn Close, Christina Hendricks, Gillian Anderson, and it was written, obviously, by Agatha Christie, but the screenplay was adapted by Julian Fellowes, who we all know from Downton Abbey, among other things, and Gosford Park. Mm-hmm. So he knows quite a bit about period British screenplay writing.
The trailer looks phenomenal. I haven't watched the movie, but the trailer's great.
I haven't watched the movie either, but I agree. The trailer looks really, really good, really gripping. And most importantly, we chose this book because we asked our friends, Emily and Audrey, at The Year of Agatha, which book of Agatha Christie's we should do. And this was one of their favorites. And they wanted to have an opportunity to introduce this book to you because obviously Murder on the Orient Express is a big deal right now because that movie also just came out, a new adaptation mm-hmm. of it. But a lot of people have already read that one. So this is one that's not as familiar, but that they love very much and recommended. And obviously Agatha Christie loved it herself. So I'm really excited that Emily and Audrey are going to be on our next episode to talk about Agatha Christie and this novel. And just a little bit about Emily and Audrey. They started the blog The Year of Agatha in 2016. And mm-hmm. during that year, they read every single Agatha Christie book and reviewed it, talked about it at length, summarized it, the things that they liked about it, and basically gave it what they call the Year of Agatha treatment, which was their personal little analyses of every single book. So check out their website. They know what they're talking about, obviously, because they've read everything that Agatha Christie wrote. and they have a fantastic social media situation. I love their Instagram. They're very active on it's really good. They are great on Twitter. And now that they have completed the challenge of reading all of the Agatha Christie mysteries, they have other mysteries that they review on their website as well. And they also have really good author interviews with authors like Christopher Bolin and Anton Disclafani and all sorts of really good stuff. They know what they're talking about, these ladies. So I'm really excited to get schooled.
Like, we are not experts. We are going to bow to whatever they say.
Yes.
Are they at yearofagatha.com?
They are at Year of Agatha. It's Blogspot. So, okay. But if you just Google The Year of Agatha, they will be the first thing to pop up.
They are so fun. This is going to be fantastic. And so I think we have another special thing planned for this book, right?
Yes, we do. We have another giveaway.
Ah!
Yes. I have another copy of Crooked House to give away to you guys. So we haven't exactly decided how we're going to give it away yet, but mm-mm. one way to figure out what we're doing is follow us on social media. It'll pop up somewhere, either on Twitter or Instagram. So you can find us at Twitter at Misfit Book Club or Instagram at Misfit Book Club or Facebook Misfit Book Club. Those are our mm-hmm. three main social media places. So just kind of check those places out to see where our giveaway is taking place.
Giving stuff away is like surprisingly fun. I get why Oprah does it.
We're basically just like Oprah.
Yeah. And with that, we are starting to wrap this episode up. This was a really fun one.
This was fun. This is a different one for us. We haven't done anything in this genre yet. So I'm really excited to see where our conversation goes next week with Emily and Audrey.
Is going to be so great. So make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe to the Misfit Book Club podcast. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Pocket Cast, Overcast, like wherever you want to get your podcasts, we're there, except Spotify. Don't look for us on Spotify. We're working on it.
And we love reviews and ratings. Those help us out a lot. And even if you can't or don't want to review us on the internet, we love a verbal review as well. Tell your friends about us. Marie and I are anonymous, so we can't tell all of our friends what we're doing. This is a big secret. So we rely on you guys to spread news about us word of mouth style.
Mm-hmm. And if you have any suggestions for us about what you would like for us to read, make sure to shoot us an email at misfitbookclubpodcast@gmail.com. We are actively taking suggestions. We have some open months coming up mm-hmm. that we would love to fill with something you want to read. So don't forget to hit us up there too. And so, of course, you can always join us. We have a Goodreads group. Just search for Misfit Book Club. You can also friend us on Goodreads. So just type in our email address and you can be our friends. And we review other books that we read that we don't talk about on this podcast. So in case you want my opinion on romance novels, which is really what's there, you got to follow us. And make sure that you follow us on Instagram because our discussion questions are going to start in a week or so. I'm excited about it.
Me too. I think it's going to be really fun.
Awesome. And with that, we're at the end.
We're at the end. We're at the beginning of 2018. And I got to say, 2017, one of the highlights for me was this podcast.
100%.
Probably the highlight of 2017.
You know, you're not wrong.
All right, guys, thanks for listening, and we look forward to talking to you on the internet.
All right, guys, have a great 2018. Well, wait, I don't. Nope. Bye.
Bye.